So now we move from gazing on the beauty of the Lord to a community that's devouring one another. 1 Corinthians 1. I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there will be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. My brothers and sisters, some from Chloe's household, have informed me that there are quarrels among you. What I mean is this. One of you says, I follow Paul. Another person says, well, I follow Apollos. Another says, I follow Cephas or Peter. Still another, well, I follow Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? I thank God that I did not baptize any of you except Crispus and Gaius, so no one can say that they were baptized in my name. Well, yes, I also baptized the household of Stephanas, but beyond that, I don't remember if I baptized anyone else. For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom and eloquence, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. This is the word of the Lord. So I want to begin with the psalm this morning. And I want to begin with that line where the psalmist says, I desire one thing, to gaze upon the beauty of God. So we are going to talk this morning about what's beautiful, about what you find beautiful, about seeking beauty, taking delight in beauty. So as we begin, this is a real question. I want to hear from you. What is it that you find beautiful? And it can be anything at all. What do you find beautiful?
Nature.
Okay, anything specific? Any certain scene? Nature, all of it. What else?
Birds.
Someone after my own heart. Child. Clouds.
Babies.
Some of them. Somebody say love. Okay. What else? Music. Colors.
Eileen.
Bill. Nice move. Nice move. Eileen, this was not a setup. I didn't arrange this ahead of time. So, thank you for participating. We all find a variety of different things beautiful. But now let me ask you, how often do you give voice to that feeling? Those of you who are regulars on social media might post a bunch of different stuff. That's okay. But when was the last time you used your voice on social media to say, here's something I find stunningly beautiful? Look at this beautiful landscape, this dress, this building, whatever. And if you're not a social media person, when was the last time you shared something like that in conversation with someone else? Something you found overwhelmingly beautiful? What I'm trying to get at as we start this morning is whether we're awake and alive to all the different forms that beauty can take around us, okay? So now to birds. So somebody is ahead of me over here on birds. So when starlings form a, it's called a murmuration, right? When starlings form a ball in the sky and do different things. So we're going to do something a little bit different this morning, and that is I've asked Becky to start a slideshow on the screen. So it will just run and it will loop around. There's about 25 images. All these images come from an article in the Atlantic magazine about starling murmurations and about the beauty that these forms of birds can take. So you can ignore me and just look at that this morning, or if you don't like that, block that out. Whatever you want to do, that's okay. You do you. You get to be here and learn and grow and engage in ways that make sense for you. We're not always going to employ the screen in this way. And in fact, we've talked as a worship committee, as session, we're thankful for this screen, but it's not, you know, we don't make a huge deal of it. We'll use it on occasion, In general, I find that the whole week is dominated by all sorts of screens, so we don't want Sunday to always just be another screen in your face. But this morning, birds, starling murmurations on the screen. So I do find these starling murmurations beautiful. There are no videos of them, but if you've seen them, they're beautiful as they morph and change and shift in the sky and flow in these really beautiful ways. They are chaotic and unpredictable. They never last long in any one shape. So they're beautiful, but there's a form to this beauty. Scientists do tell us that there is order in all this starling murmuration playfulness. So starlings obey three basic rules in these murmurations. So here are the rules the starlings obey. First, they fly wingtip to wingtip. Second, they fly in perfect tandem with the seven birds closest to them. Third, when in doubt or if something goes wrong, they always fly towards the middle. Three rules, right? That allow this wonderful shifting, changing form of beauty to take place. So, my hope is that you will leave worship today with an image of beauty that sits alongside these readings from the Psalms and from 1 Corinthians, but you know, some of you will, these images will really resonate with some of you. Others of you, they won't do anything at all. That's okay. So the images will keep going, but now come back with me to these two readings. They sit very oddly together. I hope it felt a little jarring to read the psalm and then to move from the reading from Corinthians. The psalm is about beauty, and the reading from Corinthians was all about division, conflict, parties. The psalm is about our attraction to God's loveliness. And the Corinthian reading is about how easily we can get bent out of shape with other people. If the psalm is a reading that sort of calls to our best, calls us into the upper reaches of our life possibilities, the Corinthian reading reminds us how often we get stuck living far beneath what God makes possible for us with one another. But I like both these readings. I like it that they're in tension with one another. I don't want to give up either of them. I want the truth of both of these readings to shape our lives together. I want the inspiration and the exhilaration that comes from a life that pays attention to what's beautiful. And I want the honesty and the realism, the authenticity that comes from a life that can, in fact, deal with all that's confusing and painful. So my question for you this morning is, what if the life that God offers to you is a beautiful mess? Is that good enough? What if the life God offers to you and to me is a beautiful mess? Will that be good enough? Can you rejoice in that life? Can you be grateful for that gift? The psalmist prays, "One thing I ask of the Lord that I will seek after, to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in the temple." Now, notice a couple of things about this psalmist's prayer. First, there's the singularity of this intense, passionate desire. There's this seeking. I want one thing more than all the other things I might want in life, says the psalmist. I might want some other stuff too, but all those other things I want could be gathered up and find their own place, integrated into this larger, life-consuming desire to behold the beauty of the Lord. What would it feel like to live a life that was completely taken up into that desire, to behold God's beauty? Second, did you notice the architectural dimension to this prayer? What the psalmist wants is to live in the house of the Lord, to inquire in God's temple. So we will need to be asking ourselves this morning whether we too believe that God is in fact beautiful. That's not an easy question to answer. I think that's not simple. But if we do leave here this morning saying that yes, we too confess that God is beautiful, what do we mean by that? How would your life reflect that confession that God is in fact beautiful? Regardless of how you answer that question, it's clear that for this psalmist, for this person praying, it is the beauty of the temple, of this building, of this architectural object in Jerusalem that had something to do with this The emergence of this desire to seek the beauty of the Lord. So if you are a person who takes delight in architectural forms of any kind, you have a good friend in today's psalmist. If you notice the shape of a building, if you notice an architectural line, if you find delight when you walk into a space and it's symmetrical and well laid out, you have a friend in this psalmist. We might want to say that the psalmist is beholding God's beauty in a rather indirect way. Perhaps the central experience for the psalmist was an experience of being in this temple, in this architectural space, in this building with all of its things you already mentioned, right? Its color, its symmetry, its form, its majesty, its soaring space. And this building, this artfully made object, became for the psalmist a sign or an expression of God's own true beauty. That is, now get this, this will be helpful to us. The psalmist was able to move from an experience of beauty in the world right around him to confess the beauty of the God who was responsible for that temple and for every other form of beauty we might encounter in the world. That move is important. Come, my heart says, seek his face. Your face, Lord, do I seek. Somebody mentioned babies' faces. So, yes, here. Do not hide your face from me. Don't turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Don't cast me off. Don't forsake me, O God of my salvation. So what is the connection between seeking after the beauty of the Lord in the temple and now seeking God's face? Maybe these are parallel statements. Maybe they're just ways of restating the same idea. But it does seem like there's a shift in tone, a shift from the beauty of the temple now to seeking the beauty of God's face. The psalmist's way of praying registers an intense, passionate desire to experience God's beauty and not merely the signs of God's beauty in the world around us. When we pray with a passionate plea for God to come to our aid, to come to our deliverance, to give us help, we need more than just signs of a God who is off elsewhere. We need God's face, God's beautiful face, God's lively presence with us in the mess. Now you'll notice that the psalmist longs for the beauty of God, longs to see God's face, but also notice that the psalmist does not mention have to do all this praying and seeking within a congregation full of other people. This prayer is wonderful. I love it, but it does feel a bit abstract to me. The question about how we respond to beauty in our lives is not the only question. There is also this question to how do we stay awake and alive to all the beautiful things in our lives when we are surrounded by so many irritating, annoying people, so many frustrating and stressful situations. We have to welcome this beauty into our lives whenever we can, however we can get it. But most of the time, we're living in the friction of our ordinary lives, working, going to school, cleaning, organizing, caring for others, people who need us, running errands. Or we're trying to figure out how to fit in, how to collaborate, how to cooperate with other people in projects that we care about. Whether that's you're part of a civic group, you're part of a book group, you're part of a dinner club, you're a parent on a children's sports team, you're on a leadership board, you're trying to work things out with your neighbors or your own family or live together with other people in a congregation. There are friction, there are tension points that happen when we collaborate and try to share our lives with other people. And those rhythms of trying to find common ground with other people, trying to get along with others, they can be unbelievably trying, can't they? They can get us so worked up and out of sorts that the last thing on earth we're able to think about or give attention to is the beauty that's right in front of us. This is the challenge faced by those early followers of Jesus in Corinth, and I think it's part of what makes our lives challenging as well. When we're stressed, when we're worried, when we're angry or sad, when we've been wounded, or when we're frustrated, we might walk right by something that's stunningly beautiful and not even notice it. The Corinthians have joined this little congregation. They're probably just meeting in someone's large house, but they've embarked on a new form of community life. They're attempting to build a new kind of family, to live together in a new way. They've heard the good news of God's love for us in Jesus Christ, and they all said, sign me up. I'll receive baptism. I want in on this experiment. I want to see what it's like to live in this new way. But then things go wrong. What they experience in their life together is conflict and division. Everybody's lining up between their different favorite leaders, choosing sides. I'm more right than you are. Rather than feeling united around common goals, they feel pulled into competing factions, rival teams, supporting different leaders. Does this sound familiar to anyone? What had been an attraction to a beautiful way of life at first has now become a bitter and negative experience, a failure to get what initially attracted them into the life of the community. Now, all of us have had some version of this experience. And in this situation, the Apostle Paul reminds us that this wonderful symbol at the center of our faith, the cross, the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, this cross is not meant to be prettied up. It's not a fancy thing. He says, I don't want to talk about it with eloquent wisdom. The cross is powerful precisely in its foolishness. It works precisely because it's silly. It's profound precisely because it's childish. So here, the Apostle Paul presses back against our need and our desire to always have beautiful things around us. What kind of beauty is it that we want? What kind of beauty is it that we notice? Are we willing to behold the beauty within a world and within a life that can often, more often than not, feel very ugly? Are we so devoted to what's beautiful that we've lost the capacity to see and to deal with what's difficult and confusing, what's terrifying and what's heartbreaking about our lives? Now, it's true that the cross of Jesus might be beautiful in some poetic way, but it's also a sign of grotesque violence. The crushing of a human life, it's a sign of terror, not just to Jesus, but to all who might be on his team. It's an occasion for betrayal and hatred. It is, if nothing else, a body disfigured in violence and shamed. So we ought at least to be careful, says the Apostle Paul, about calling this cross or this way of life that we've all signed up for, but calling all this a life of beauty. These questions that we're raising today about beauty, about ugliness, about whether we can find the beauty in the mess, these are challenges for all of us because we all live in different kinds of relationships. These will be challenges here in how we live with one another within our congregational life. These will be challenges in how you live in, if you're a married person, in your family life, how you relate to your parents, how you relate to your children, how you relate to your siblings. These will be challenges we'll have to work out in our work lives and how we earn a living and our desire to be part of a healthy community that's moving forward. It will be part of the work we have to do in our quest for a healthy political life on the broader national stage. Here we are this week. I haven't mentioned it yet, but if you didn't know, we're in the middle of impeachment hearings. These are challenging times to find the beauty in the mess. So let me conclude by proposing a little test for all of us today. And don't worry if you don't feel up to the test today. There are many days that I certainly wouldn't pass my own test. But the test might look like this. Can you honestly look at the world around you? Honestly look at it for what it is, with all that's wrong, with all that's out of joint. Can you look with honesty at your own life? With all that still hasn't been worked out, with all that's frustrating and disappointing? And can you pray with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, something like this. Loving God, thank you for this beautiful mess. Thank you for this beautiful mess. Paying attention to beautiful things can become for all of us a form of prayer. That is, we need not be surprised by our attraction to beautiful things. Hopefully, we're learning to recognize our desire for beauty as an important part of who we are, an important part of our lives, our way of being in the world, our particular form of being grateful and offering witness to this good news. But this can only happen if we learn to connect our desire for beauty with our desire for the one who is the source of all this beauty, the fount of all that appears beautiful to us. So in our praying, we can begin to come to grips with our passion, with our desire, as signs or pointers to the beauty that gives us birth and sustains us through all our lives. In our praying, we can begin to come to grips with the need to fight, to struggle for our own desires. for our need to stay awake to what's beautiful around us. So we pray and we desire, we yearn, we seek God's face in a world that always crucifies the innocent and celebrates what's ugly. Friends, these are powerful forces, we should be honest, but beauty is more attractive. Beauty is more persuasive. Beauty is more alluring. Beauty is more inviting than anything else in the world.